This is Dr. Jeffrey Hudon in his teaching on biblical archaeology. This is session number 16, Archaeology and the Historical David.
Okay, subsequent to the death of Saul, David returned to Judah and ruled as king over the tribe of Judah in Hebron for 7 years. After that, he was invited by the other tribes to become king over all Israel. At that point, he made a very wise tactical decision and chose a neutral location to rule from, and that was the Canaanite or Jebusite city of Jebus or Jerusalem. And David and his men, specifically Joab his general, attacked the citadel or the fortress of Zion. Again, a pre-Israelite name. Zion is not initially a Hebrew term. It's a pre-Israelite name for Jerusalem. And conquered the city and made it his royal domain. So Jerusalem became almost kind of a Washington, D.C., of ancient Israel. This is a very, again, like the conquest, a very important period in Israel's history for archaeological work. And again, it's a complicated and period that has a lot of differing opinions. Just a couple of, four photos here. Let's point out some things. This is a computer-generated reconstruction of a site called Kirbet Kiafa, which either dates to the reign of Saul or to the reign of David. And this overlooks the Elah Valley, where David fought Goliath. And you can see here a large four-room-style house, which was probably a governor's residency or an administrative residency for the ruler of this city. It also has two gates, here and here. And that feature makes a lot of scholars believe this is biblical Sha'arim, which means two gates, that was in this immediate vicinity. So a good indication of the biblical name for this site. Over here is another artist's rendition of Jerusalem at the time of David. Again, isolated to the city of David, no extension onto Mount Zion or Mount Moriah, or the Western Hill. You have this extension here of the Gihon Spring and a tower there to protect the water source of the city. Down here on the bottom left is Slaves Hill at Timnah, where mining operations took place during this time of mining of copper. And those are that accelerated under David and Solomon, and certainly were under their direction, at least in my opinion. And then finally, a close-up of a stela fragment found at Dan, 1992-1993. And this caused a lot of scholarly activity and speculation and differing opinions, because on it, it says the word House of David, Beit David. And that's the first known mention of David in a contemporary document. The stela dates approximately a century after David himself. So it talks about his dynasty, the king of the house of David. Okay, a biblical portrait of David's life and his legacy. David's early years, again, he grew up in Bethlehem and the Rephaim Valley. There's a Iron One site, which we'll talk about here in a future slide, named Gilo, that may have to do in part with one of his wars with the Philistines. Gibeah of Saul, which he was a member of Saul's court. Elah Valley, where he defeated Goliath. Gath was, again, when he was fleeing from Saul, David served under time at Achish, with King Achish of Gath, and was given the city of Ziklag. And that ended when the Philistines defeated the Israelites on Mount Gilboa, and David went back into Judah and became king over the tribe of Judah. Wilderness of Judah figured in David's life because of his fleeing from Saul, There's places mentioned there, such as the stronghold, which may be a term for Masada, the later Herodian stronghold. Jerusalem, Bethsaida. One of his wives were from Bethsaida, princess of Geshur. Rabbat Ammon, where he sent his army to fight the Ammonites. Inscriptions, Tel Dan, the Moabite Stela, and Karnak Temple all may mention the house of David, not just one of them, but all three of them. And then Kirbet Kiafa, which was a recently discovered site, which has very important implications for the early monarchy. And then finally, Timna Valley, which we saw a picture of the Slaves Hill location, which has all of this area. Timna Valley and the Edom Lowlands have important discoveries relating to copper mining and production during the 10th century, during the time of David and Solomon. Looking again, stepping back and looking at the world at the time of the reign of David, you see a golden opportunity here because Egypt and Mesopotamia are weak. The Assyrians, the Babylonians, and the Egyptians all are in decline. And so there is essentially a power vacuum, no superpower in this great region to affect the policies of these petty kingdoms or regional kingdoms in the Levant. So David is able to flex his muscles and through warfare and treaties expand his influence greatly and become a very strong regional kingdom, if not mini empire. Now, with the discovery of the Tel Dan Stela, House of David, almost at the same time, just a year previously, year or two previously, this book came out. And Philip R. Davies, a gentleman pictured here looking at a book and kind of smirking at the camera, wrote this book. And Davies was an agnostic or atheist. And he suggests in this book that, in quotes, King David is about as historical as King Arthur. He argued that David was legendary, that it was a myth. He never even existed. And of course, the next year or two, they find the Tel Dan Stela. And the challenge that Davies and others of his ilk made was that this doesn't refer to David, but it refers to some unknown deity with the same consonants. And of course, very few people accepted that. Rather, they accepted how it easily reads as the House of David. Here's another picture of the entire Tel Dan Stela. It's discovered in 1993. It's kind of got an interesting story here. Avraham Biran, a very senior archaeologist at Hebrew Union College, had been digging at Dan since 1966. And his assistant was kind of a minimalist. She did not have a high view of Scripture. And they're doing some clearing outside of the outer gate at Dan. And she found this piece of basalt in secondary use in a wall with this inscription on it. And Avraham Biran came by, I think her name was Gila Cook, if I remember, and said, "My gosh, we have an inscription." And so they immediately looked around for more basalt pieces of this inscription and found these two others eventually. And still very fragmentary, but they're able to read more of the text. And this text is not an Israelite text. It is Aramean, from the Aramean king Hazael. Most likely when Hazael took over Dan a century after David's life, and mentions the king of Israel and the king of the house of David in this inscription, his defeat of them. So, again, you've got essentially a contemporary document from a non-Israelite source mentioning not necessarily King David, but the house of David, the Davidic dynasty. And so that really proves, under any circumstances, it has to prove that there was a historical David. And so all of the work of Philip R. Davies and his quote that David is about as historical as King Arthur falls flat on its face. Now, at the same time, a French scholar was, again, studying the Mesha Stela, the Moabite Stela. And this is a stela dating about the time of the Tel Dan inscription, but from erected by the king of Moab, Mesha, in Transjordan, around 840 BC, about the same time. And the lower lines were obscure, but André Lemaire, the professor that was studying these lines, thought he recognized the term Heights of David on there. And so there was a second mention, possibly, of David. Finally, K.A. Kitchen, the British Egyptologist, was reading the Shishak list at Karnak and believes he also mentions the Highland of David in the Shishak inscription. And I may have misspoken here, but I think the Highland of David is in the Karnak. House of David is in the Mesha Stela and the Tel Dan Stela. So within just a few years, you have three references discovered, one on a newly discovered inscription, two on inscriptions that have been known for a long time, House of David being read or some form of David. And so this was very, very important and a huge discovery for the historicity of Scripture because, again, a lot of scholars question whether David even existed. Certainly, if there was a historical David, was he as great as the Bible claimed him to be? Again, we look at Bethlehem. This is where David grew up. We don't know exactly where his home was. I have a theory about that, which I'll mention in a minute. But Bethlehem today is a sprawling city, probably half Christian or most likely majority Muslim at this point. But this was, again, the home of David. And we'll see this bulla. We may have seen it before. We'll see it again. Very important seal impression found recently in Jerusalem. And you can see the word Bethlehem here in Paleo here. But you can see the little bit of the Beit, the Tav, the Lamed, the He, and the beginning of the Mem. So that spells out Bethlehem. And that's the oldest inscription that mentions the name of that city that's ever been found. Dates to about 700 BC. Okay, we talked about the Rephaim Valley before, but overlooking the Rephaim Valley, again, the breadbasket of Jerusalem, the valley that goes down into the Sorek Valley and ultimately to the coast, this was a battleground. And it was a battleground because the Philistines twice tried to come up this valley from the Shephelah and attack David in Jerusalem. And David was an excellent general and had his soldiers hidden on the sides of the valley, and when the Philistines got close, he attacked them and defeated them. Now, why was David so successful there? Well, there was a site discovered shortly after the Six-Day War overlooking the Rephaim Valley to the south, and it was a very rustic, poorly preserved Iron One Israelite settlement site that they named Gilo. Gilo was actually... it's an ancient name, but it actually isn't related to the site, but it's called Gilo nevertheless. Gilo has, a kind of a perimeter wall, and there were some houses that, again, poorly preserved, just sections of walls. But two things here that are important. One is an Iron II watchtower that was built probably in the 8th century, and then off the screen here to the north was an Iron I, a solid tower that overlooked the Rephaim Valley. And I believe that it was from this site that David's army descended into the valley and attacked the Philistines and defeated the Philistines coming up. Why do I say that? Because I also believe that Gilo and the surrounding upper reaches of the Rephaim Valley was a property or territory belonging to David's clan, to David's family. And there's evidence, too, that this was a royal estate later on in the Iron Age from the Davidic monarchy because of a tunnel and some royal architecture found along the Rephaim Valley. So possibly even with the name that is mentioned or stamped on royal jar handles later. Now, the person who excavated Gilo was Ami Mazar, one of my former professors when I was in Israel. And Ami Mazar did a very good job excavating this, and today, unfortunately, there's an Israeli housing development around it, but it's preserved, the site itself. The importance of this site is multifaceted. One of the important parts of this site is that there was no water here. It was elevated site. They had protection from the surrounding terrain. However, it had no spring, and a very difficult life for the settlers there at Gilo in the period of the Judges. At the same time that this was being processed and studied, certain Israeli scholars argued that Jerusalem at this time was just a very minor, if not even occupied, town. The important thing here to understand is Gilo had no water source. Jerusalem does. Jerusalem had the Gihon Spring. And there's no sensible way that Jerusalem would be abandoned and Gilo would be occupied. So just the fact that Gilo existed without a water source really proves that Jerusalem was a town, probably of some stature. You could call it a city during this transition period between Bronze Age and the monarchy. Okay, another view of Gibeah of Saul. And this is again where David was part of the court of Saul during his early years before his kingship. And again, a picture of where he fought Goliath to review his life. And another pictures of Philistines and Goliath. The Bible gives very descriptive terminology about Goliath's armor. And again, a scholar from Cornell University, Jeffrey Zorn, has written an excellent paper on that, published about 15 years ago, on the armor of Goliath and the historicity of the account given that description. And that's well worth reading. And of course, Goliath's hometown, Gath, which we've seen before. And again, when David was a renegade from Saul, he would head out to the Judean wilderness, and as well as the Philistine city of Gath, to escape Saul. And of course, we remember the Battle of Mount Gilboa and the death of Saul and Jonathan, and this is what made David king in the aftermath of that. Okay, again, an artist's rendition of Jerusalem during the time of Solomon, or shortly thereafter. So let's take a look at this. I hope to discuss Jerusalem's history more in depth at a later lecture. But today, this depicted here is the Kidron Valley. And the Mount of Olives is up here off the picture, the Mount of Offense. And then here is the Tyropian Valley, or Central Valley, as Josephus calls it, the Valley of the Cheesemakers, coming down here. And so this provided at least somewhat protection on two sides, or three sides. The northern side of the city of David, this is the original core settlement area of Jerusalem up until the time of Solomon. Did not include this extension here, and this is a city here that David conquered. And you can see the weak part of the city is to the north. Now there's kind of a saddle here called the Milo, and then another ascent up into Mount Moriah or Mount Zion, actually, the Temple Mount. So what we see here is a stepstone structure with parts of it still exists, and the Fortress of Zion, or David's palace, that was above that. And then, of course, the houses of the city below that. Now, Jerusalem was interesting because not only was it not Israelite controlled, Israel initially conquered it and then it reverted back into Jebusite control until Joab and David conquered it into his reign, 7 years into his reign. Jerusalem was off the beaten path. It really didn't have any great strategic features that would draw people to it. The main road, the Route of the Patriarchs, was well to the west, probably a 20 or 25 minute walk off of the road to get to the city. Again, it was fairly well protected on some sides, but on the north it was very vulnerable, and you can see the gate there and the towers. The one thing it did have was a spring, a water source, the Gihon Spring, somewhere in this area here. And recent excavations suggest that there was walls coming out of the city walls with a tower here protecting that spring. At this point, when this was made, most scholars believe there was a tunnel and not walls and towers. But recent excavations have shown that those may have existed as early as the Middle Bronze Age, the period of the late patriarchs. So not an impressive city by any means, but David jumped on this because it was right on the border between the tribal territories of Judah and Benjamin, and it was a foreign enclave. So he took that and made it royal property. It was a brilliant move because it was neutral territory. No tribe could claim that they had the capital on their in their territory. Now, after the death of David, Solomon took over and expanded the city to encompass Mount Moriah. And parts of this wall can be seen today, south of the Temple Mount. A lot of this is speculation on where palaces were and what they looked like. We know generally what palaces looked like at the time of Solomon, but we know that there were several palaces and, of course, the temple compound. But a lot of that is somewhat speculative. We'll unpack that in a later lecture. Politically, David had a large empire. Again, there was still a small Philistine area here that was under Israeli hegemony, but they were a vassal of Israel. And then way up into Syria, there was Syrian kingdoms that were either vassals or directly controlled all the way up to the Euphrates River. So this was, under David and initially at least under Solomon, the height of Israelite control of the southern Levant. Notice, however, that the Phoenicians maintained their territory, and at some point during the reign of Solomon, when the land of Kabul was seceded to them, came all the way down here. They had the coastline. They wanted the seaports. Israel grew the crops and olives, and they would ship the Phoenicians would ship those to markets across the Mediterranean. So it was a great business partnership, but to religiously, it was not the best agreement. Now, Jerusalem is a city that's been continuously occupied since well before the time of Abraham. Its history goes back into the Chalcolithic period, some say the Neolithic period even, certainly the Chalcolithic period. And so excavations in Jerusalem are very, very difficult to do and very complicated. You will dig down 4 meters and hit Roman pottery, perhaps, from the time of Christ, and then immediately hit bedrock. And you move 5 feet over and dig down, and you'll find Iron Age and Bronze Age and maybe even Chalcolithic sherds in the crevices in the bedrock. Whereas just 5 feet away, you'd swear it was only dated back to the time of the Romans. Well, the Romans maybe built a structure there and cleared it to bedrock. And so they eradicated all the older material. So Jerusalem has to be excavated very carefully. And sometimes, as in the case of the excavations of Yigel Shiloh, they actually had to do the stratigraphy on the pottery table. There was no clear stratigraphy in the field. So it was it's a challenging place to excavate, but also one of the most important places to excavate because so much of biblical history took place here. In 2005, Elat Mazar, granddaughter of Benjamin Mazar, one of the founders of Israeli archaeology, excavated in the city of David and actually found a monumental building dating to the very end of the Iron I or very early Iron II period. And the structure had very thick walls. It was only partially excavated, partially preserved. But she believes she has found the walls of David's palace because of, again, the data in the Bible coupled with what was found on the ground. And so, again, an artist's rendition, Lean Rittmeyer, drew this up of what David's palace probably looked like and partially, perhaps, discovered by Elat Mazar. This revetment wall or revetment glacis here is still in existence today here. So this is David's palace would have been in this area here. This is looking south, Kidron Valley's here in the eastern slope of the city of David. Here's an artist's rendition of David looking out on his city. You can see the city of David spread out before him, and the style of volute capitals, which we'll talk about later, and balustrades are known archaeologically. And by the way, it's a picture of Elat Mazar, who excavated so much of this, and we owe her a great debt of gratitude. She has unfortunately passed away. Now, we talked about Kirbet Kiafa several times. Here's another view of Kirbet Kiafa overlooking the Elah Valley. This could have been Saul's headquarters, or it could have been David's headquarters later when he was king. There's a debate on the exact date of the site. It was only occupied roughly 50 to 100 years. It was a relatively short occupation and fairly well preserved in most areas. The excavator, Yossi Garfinkel, is showing here a clay model of a shrine. And he has pointed out in various articles that this is a very early prototype shrine that depicts the later Temple of Solomon. And of course, that was found, this is partially restored, that was found at Kirbet Kiafa. And here's some pottery found there. And here's one of the four-chamber gates at Kirbet Kiafa overlooking the Elah Valley. Very, very important site. The pottery there and the radiocarbon dating has, again, led to almost the rewriting of textbooks, because all of a sudden you've got Judahite control over, because it's clearly a Judahite site, control over the lower Elah Valley, and that tells us it's not some small chiefdom or David ruling from some Bedouin tent. This is a real kingdom. And if they built stuff like this here, Jerusalem certainly was much more elaborate than what they previously thought. Here's some pottery from the site, and again, other pictures of the site. This is part of that central building. That was probably the administrative center or the governor's house, whoever ruled Sha'arim at the time of either Saul or David. Now, in the city of David, inside the city, these two tunnels were excavated. And they were excavated over a century ago, about 110 years ago, 1914, and thereafter by a French archaeologist by the name of Raymond Weil. He was a Jewish archaeologist, the first Jewish archaeologist to dig in Jerusalem. And he excavated down to bedrock here and found these two tunnels. And again, immediately, some scholars believe that these possibly were remnants of the royal tombs of the Davidic dynasty. Now, how do we know this? Well, Nehemiah chapter 3 describes Nehemiah's midnight examination of Jerusalem's walls. And when Nehemiah gets to this point along eastern walls, he says, opposite the tombs of the kings. And right when Weil dug these out, this is the general vicinity where Nehemiah would have been. Now, different archaeologists have different interpretations. A lot of them didn't think these were tombs. Clearly, they've been quarried away later on. They were originally extended farther out. But Kathleen Kenyon, when she was excavating Jerusalem in the 1960s, thought that they were cisterns. Now, they may have been used as cisterns later in their history, if they were plastered, but that was a secondary use. The initial use was something else. And it wasn't until another article by Jeffrey Zorn, who again wrote on Goliath's armor, he wrote a very important article showing parallels to royal tombs at Hatzor in the late Bronze period. And I believe tombs of the kings of Urartu are also mimic this gallery style where you have these tunnels going in into bedrock. So what we have here, I believe, is the remnants of the tombs of David, Solomon, and the kings after them, long since robbed away and quarried away, much of them quarried away, but still remnants of them existing for us to see today. By the way, when you go to Israel and say, I want to see David's tomb, most guides will not take you here. They will take you to a place on Mount Zion near the upper room, and they will say, here's David's tomb, and show you the sarcophagus, and you can stand there and with your yarmulke on and observe this. This is clearly not David's tomb. Mount Zion was not Mount Zion. Today is not Mount Zion at the time of the Bible. Mount Zion is the top of the western hill. It's misnamed. And this tomb was certainly not the tomb of David. There may have been tombs of the later kings of Judah on top Mount Zion because of the palace of the Garden of Uzzah that Manasseh and his successors lived in. And that might have been atop Mount Zion. So there may be some small segment or small kernel of truth there. The later kings of Judah, the last kings of Judah, some of them may have been buried in this vicinity, but not David. And again, around 20 years ago, Tom Levy of the University of California, San Diego, began researching and excavating copper mining operations in the Edomite lowlands along the Arava on the Jordanian side of the modern border, and found a place called Kirbet en Nahas, or the ruins of copper, and found a very, very elaborate fortress and copper mining system. And clearly, this was not some Bedouin operation or some tribal operation. This was a very elaborate, well-planned operation done by a regional kingdom. Which kingdom? Was it the Edomites? Well, we don't think so. It was probably, most likely, the Israelites under David and Solomon. Later on, farther south at Timnah, on the Israel side of the Arava, Erez ben Yosef, Tel Aviv University, found additional copper mining operations at sites near Timnah. This is Slaves Hill. We saw a picture of this earlier. And again, radiocarbon dating has dated this to the early 10th century, the time of David.
This is Dr. Jeffrey Hudon in his teaching on biblical archaeology. This is session number 16, Archaeology and the Historical David.